This is NRL Boom Rookies.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Boom Rookies presented by ESPN. I am Matt Bungard, and with me today, Nick Campton. Hello.
A merry good Friday to all of you. I hope it's a great Friday for you and yours.
What a nice sentiment. I hope so too, Nick. And my beloved South City Roaders will be in action later today. But we have, of course, recorded all of the preview show already, but we are jumping on Friday morning really quickly just to talk about the Thursday night game where the Penrith Panthers saw off the Sydney Roosters 22-16. I think a scoreline that flatters the Roosters a tiny bit, Nick. And a surprisingly comfortable win for Penrith in the end.
Yeah, it was surprisingly comfortable. Like I wasn't expecting the Roosters to romp this in or anything of that nature, because Penrith are too well-drilled and too sort of committed to their process of succeeding to ever really get blown out when they have anything near their best team on the field. Even if Nathan Cleary, their best player, and James Fisher-Harris, they're sort of the driver of a lot of their toughness. Even if those guys aren't there, you know, you can still expect a lot from Penrith. But I was actually really, really disappointed by what the Roosters produced in this game. And I wrote a little bit about this earlier this week. Because the Roosters are the Roosters, and because they have so many stars, and because I think there is a sort of general expectation that they're going to be successful, a lot of times over the last few years when they've had a performance like they did against Souths, where they win big and they look great doing it, there is a temptation sometimes to then click into, well, the Roosters are back. The Roosters are back. It's 2018-19 again. They're here to kick the shit out of everyone. They're here to challenge the Panthers. They're here to sort of take their place back at the top of the league. And I've been guilty of being going too quickly on that in the past several times. Now, because I've been burnt so many times, I'm now much more hesitant about it. And it was disappointing for me with the Roosters in this game. It wasn't how the halves played, although they did play bad. It wasn't even that Penrith won, because Penrith can win on demand all the time. It was just how uncommitted the Roosters seemed to the process of winning. You know? And you compare that to the Panthers, who are all about that process. They've somehow managed to discover a style where they like fighting more than they like winning. And that's why they win all the time. And the Roosters, it just felt like they kept trying to jump to conclusions. You know, they would spread the ball early and Penrith would slide across and totally handle them. You know, like, and I don't know. I just felt like the Roosters weren't willing to go through the process of winning in order to win this game.
Brandon Smith did look cool with the bandaged up head, though.
Well, that's always a plus.
Exactly. You got to take the positives where you can get them.
Yeah.
What did you think of Schneider? I've got your blog open right now, and you wrote that he was Cleary-like.
I didn't write that, but I do agree with it. Is Nathan
got your name on it, Jeff? It says by Nick Campton.
Does it? Are you sure this isn't AAP copy that they put on the top of the live blog?
No, this is a blog post, batch report, undermanned Panthers, Handle Roosters, 11 hours ago, by Nick Campton. And it says Schneider was Cleary-like.
No, that's AAP copy, dude. That's friend of the show, Jasper Bruce, that's written that.
Well, I'm a fan of it. All I'm saying is it says by Nick Campton.
Yes, so. Because I did the blog.
This post says by Nick Campton. Was he Cleary-like or not?
The individual post, you know, we're getting too deep into the process, the blogging process of ABC Digital Sport. No, he wasn't Cleary-like, but he was Brad Schneider-like, right?
And
Brad Schneider is really tough, a real bulldog in defense. He's got a pretty good kicking game, doesn't make mistakes, doesn't try to do anything he doesn't know how to do. You know, I really liked him at Canberra in 2022. I was surprised that the Raiders let him go. And I think that stint in Super League last year was really, really good for him. It was almost like a bit of a finishing school. He got to go over there, be the lead playmaker like for the whole KR.
I like that a lot. I like finishing school a lot. That's funny.
Yeah, yeah. And like he got to be the lead playmaker for the whole KR over there, took him to a Challenge Cup final, took him deep into the semifinals. And last night he just looked like he'd been in that Penrith system forever, you know, and I think it's a bit of an indictment on the rest of the league that Penrith were able to pick up Brad Schneider.
And this seems to now happen with alarming repetitiveness where any guy that just joins that Penrith system just looks like they've been there the whole
life. I was texting a Panthers mate of mine last night and I said, how you feeling? And he said, I feel happy for Brad Schneider. He's going to make a lot of money tonight. And I'm like, you'll know that I've made it when I start telling you I'm on that Brad Schneider money.
Absolutely. And a debut for Maverick Geyer as well.
Yeah, always nice to see. The Geyers and the Alexanders are like, until the Clearys came along, they were kind of Penrith's first family, you know? So it was really cool to see all that. I've only had a little bit to do with MG, but I know a few blokes that know him because one of his other sons had a season with Camden a few years ago. And MG was always around the club at a lot of the games, like just always had time for everyone. A really, really, really nice dude. And they're a really nice family. So I was really happy for Mav Geyer.
Yeah, the Roosters are officially weird to me. I do not understand how a team can look so good last week and then just, I know it ended up only being 6 points, but let's be real. Like, come on, they piled up a couple of late tries.
Oh, yeah. This is like the Manly game where I think they lost that by six as well, but they were well off the
pace. If you tell me these two teams scored the same number of tries, Campo, I'm going to walk out of here. I'm going to walk out of here right now.
Not on Good Friday, sir.
No. Yeah, but Dylan Edwards very good, stepped up. I think shouldered a lot of the load with that period there.
And he was terrific.
Yeah, a very impressive win for Penrith, who didn't seem to need their best player, which is terrifying.
Yeah, 100%. If I was a Roosters fan, the disappointing thing to me would be that when the Roosters did start to have success in the last 10 or 15 minutes, I know the game was pretty much gone. But the reason they were able to score those two tries that they did is because they were attacking through the middle of the field really effectively. You know, the Brandon Smith try comes from him linking with forwards around the ruck, particularly Terrell May, who I thought was pretty clearly the Roosters' best player. And they were offloading a lot and generating that ruck speed and punching around the middle of the field. And I think, you know, it's only a few weeks in, but I think this year that is probably the way to get it, Penrith. Like, we saw Parramatta do that quite successfully a couple of weeks ago, you know, like that's how they scored three of their tries, by sort of punching in around the center. But it was crazy to me that the Roosters took so long to sort of have that be the game plan, because you would think that even without Collins, right? I mean, I accept that he's a big out, but if they've got Hargraves and they've got May and they've got Radley and they've got Brandon Smith and they've got James Tedesco, you would think the middle of the field against a Panthers team that is missing the iron they usually have in the middle of the field, you would think that's where you would go. You know, so many of your strengths are directed at what isn't a weakness for Penrith, but certainly isn't as strong as it usually is. But it took until the game was gone for them to really go after it and do that, you know. So I know there's a lot of people who are really skeptical about Sam Walker and Luke Keary, if they can take this Roosters team where they should be able to go. But I did think it was not a smart performance from those two. They were just so concerned with playing quick at the edges, when I think playing direct and up the middle was probably the way to go. So I was very disappointed with what the Roosters produced. And I think they were too, judging by Trent Robinson's press conference. You know, they're talking all week about how, you know, even with Penrith having guys out, they're still the best and you're testing yourself against the best. And what else can you say? But they failed that test.
Yep, I agree. I mean, disappointed implies that I'm sad, so I wouldn't say I'm disappointed, but I am surprised how poor they were.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm not emotionally invested in the Roosters.
My friend, you doth protest too much, I think.
No, you can't frame me as a Tana Boyd fan and a Roosters fan.
If you had to pick one, which would it be?
That's the worst question ever. Can I pass?
You may pass, yes.
Okay, pass.
All right. But yes, Penrith already safely with 2 points for the weekend. We are now going to throw back to ourselves yesterday before this game when we recorded the rest of the show. I hope everybody has a safe Easter. And I will see you next weekend, Nick.
See you later.
Try! This is a try! Brilliant! Brilliant play! I think it's a try! Oh, I don't know if this is going to be a try!
Gee, what about this bloke?
Wow, that Thursday night game was certainly a barn burner, Nick.
It sure was.
Yeah, winning team certainly just had the measure over losing team.
I really think the Sydney Roosters did quite well to beat the Penrith Panthers.
Yes, I think that losing coach has some work to do in the next week.
Oh, but winning coach, oh, he's putting his feet up.
Oh, I'll bet that he is having a great time. yeah, so we're obviously recording the rest of the show before the Thursday night game, but it is time for our weekly segment of What About This Bloke, where we take a trip down memory lane to talk about a player that you might remember from yesteryear. Usually it's late 90s, early 2000s. And this week from Dean Robb, we've got an absolute banger, Campo.
We really, really do. So sitting around and naming old footy players is the finest thing a person can do. It's literally my favorite thing to do in the entire world. And Dean Robb of semi-regular segment, We Was Robbs, and a hardcore Roosters man, has come in from the cold and just served one up right in our strike zone. This is a slower ball right in the middle of the plate, and we've picked this, and we're going to send it back over the pitcher's head. He's handed us Brett Furman. So Brett Furman, a halfback or 5'8", with four different clubs in the early 2000s. And what makes him a perfect candidate for this is he's notable enough that I think a lot of fans would recognize his name. Not so notable that everyone knows his story, but notable enough that a lot of interesting things happened to him. I was thinking about it today. This is one of the great short-term roller coaster careers, the ups and downs that Brett Furman went through in a four-season period is pretty remarkable.
Yeah, it really is. And some people may remember him, of course, coming off the bench in a grand final after getting a mid-season switch after an ill-fated move to the Roosters. I mean, it was a whirlwind couple of years there for Brett Furman. He burst on the scene in 2003, a pretty solid rookie campaign with the St. George Illawarra Dragons, pretty much playing every game before things changed dramatically in 2004.
Yeah. Well, 2003, there was no Dally M's that year, right? So there was no rookie of the year or anything of that vein. Billy Slater would have been the rookie of the year. Okay. Mm. He played for Melbourne that year, was fantastic from the jump, scored close to 20 tries. You know, he was Billy Slater, man. He was fast and his support play was great and he was exciting and all that. But Brett Furman ran him pretty close. Like, he was on a Saints team that wasn't that flash, but he had a really, really good year. And Saints had sort of been looking for a long time for someone to partner Trent Barrett in the halves. They sort of hadn't found that fit ever since Anthony Mundine had gone to boxing. And with Furman, it looked like he was going to be their guy. He's from Tamora, same place as Trent Barrett. Like, what could be better than all of that? Yeah. But then the next year, he only plays one game, one first grade game. He breaks his leg playing reserve grade and doesn't get back into first grade for the rest of the season because Matt Head comes in from nowhere. And like, Matt Head himself would be a great candidate for What About This Guy. There's
Remember that sideline conversion?
Oh, dude, that's the first great Anzac Day game.
Yeah.
Where the chip and chase gets it out to Cooper, then kicks the goal from the sideline while reciting the Lord's Prayer. Like, that might have been the second coming. Maybe Jesus came back and we all missed it, you know? Mm. But so Matt Head has the great year 2004. So, and the Dragons have to make a decision. Do they go with Brett Furman, who had the great rookie year the year before? Do they go with Matt Head, who had sort of the breakout year the year after? And they choose Matty Head. So Furman's out. But then Furman goes to the Roosters, which is, I assume, where Dean is most familiar with him. And not only does he go to the Roosters, he goes to the Roosters ostensibly to help replace Brad Fittler.
Not small shoes to fill.
No, Matt, but like, what a vote of confidence from, at the time, one of the premier clubs in the entire league, you know?
Mm. But it's fair to say it didn't go great.
Well, no,
I'm shocked
Dean
remembers
great.
Him because he only played four games for him.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. Looking at some of those Roosters halves combos the year after Freddie left, dude, some crazy stuff.
Roberts and Brett Furman in the halves is incredible.
Dude, they went into round one with a halves combo of Chris Flannery and Brett Furman.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like, Wingy spent some time in there. Brett Finch was slotting in at hooker. Like, Ricky was really just seeing what was going on there, and the answer was not much. But then, so Furman's already had the big up and then a big down and then another up going to the Roosters and then another down leaving the Roosters. As you mentioned before, midway through 2005.
Yeah.
Where does he go? North Queensland.
Who, by the way, season? By the way, North Queensland beat the Roosters by 20 points in round 8, and that was the fourth and last game Brett Furman played for the Roosters. The next time he played a game in first grade would be for the team that beat him.
Goes to the Cowboys, plays in a grand final.
Off the bench, halfback
off the bench, isn't that?
And hasn't
that lost it?
And by the way, relegated to the bench so that a former, what about this bloke, Justin Smith, could start in the halves.
There were some things I missed about doing the show when I was away last year. What about this guy was definitely the biggest one, and the one I was most jealous of was the Justin Smith one, because like finding out in real time
on the bayou
that he's on the bayou fixing air conditioners and that his son's a 5-star recruit at fucking Gator Killing High or whatever.
Who knows? Yeah.
Like, oh, it's like missing.
I hope you weren't driving at the time, because you would have crashed the car.
Well, I nearly crashed the car a couple of times anyway. I didn't need much help. Oh, I was a better driver than Coleman, though. I'll tell you what, man. I'm not letting that boy back behind the wheel.
Yeah.
But, like, that's the great thing about the Brett Furman story. Like, there's guys at every turn. You know, there's like the guy cinematic universe features Brett Furman so heavily. So plays in the grand final for the Cowboys, comes off the bench, and the Cowboys are all in on it. The Cowboys love him. The Cowboys are so in on him that 3 months after the grand final, Scott Prince, the reigning premiership captain and Clive Churchill medalist, who was a Tiger then but started out as a Cowboy in 98, rang the Cowboys and said, "I really don't like living in Sydney. I want to come back home to North Queensland. I've bought a house out there right on the Willows Golf Course. So it's right near the stadium. I got family living in there now. I'm really keen to come home. Let's get this done." And the Cowboys said, "No, we have to see what we have with Brett Furman." That is 100% a true story. Scott Prince told me that for an oral history I did of the 05 Tigers back in 2015. I've never forgotten it.
Yeah.
So Brett Furman riding high, right? And then crashes down again. Only plays 7 more games for the Cowboys. And the starts the season at halfback in 06. They win their first 4 games. But then that's it. He gets dropped a little bit after that. And that's kind of the end, apart from 2 games at Penrith the following season. Like, the ups and downs of Brett Furman, the slings and arrows of outrageous fortune. It's crazy.
Like, the lifespan of a mayfly just up and down in 24 hours, and then poof, it's gone. Like, it's crazy. Like, just such a short career, but so much fitting into it. Incredible stuff.
Man, a lot of living.
Can I read you a story from 2017 from hitch.com.au?
Oh, I know you can.
Townsville goes nuts for the Furmo burger. Thousands drive past it every day, but many don't know it exists. The Furmo burger at the Take a Break Burger Bar on Thuringowa Drive has been a staple of their menu for many years, but only this week did it grab the attention of Hit 103.1's Cliffo and Loggy. After noticing
Cliffo,
the burger.
Hang on. Cliffo and Loggy, they're back together?
Both of them. Yeah. I thought Loggy would never come back after what happened. But
after the incident. I
can't even talk about it. It's so.
Were you team Cliffo or team Loggy?
I was a Loggy lad.
Yeah, see.
You're part of the Cliffo clan. I understand.
I was Cliffo clan too.
It nearly tore this show apart, actually, with the argument we had about it.
I'm sure you all remember it well.
After noticing the burger on the takeaway shop's specials board, they put it out, the call out to the locals to work out what it is. Turns out it's named after Brett Furman. And it's crumbed steak, cheese, lettuce, tomato, barbecue sauce, tomato sauce. As up and down as it gets.
That's fantastic. Is Brett Furman quoted in this story?
He's not, unfortunately. Oh. I don't know what he's up to now. I couldn't find his Instagram or anything like that. So I do know, by the way, that... someone who listens to this show made a fake Brett Furman Twitter account during the last couple of years, which was the account that was like responding to Sky News posts and like fighting with random members of NRL Twitter and stuff, which people genuinely thought was Brett Furman, but it actually wasn't.
Don't impersonate Brett Furman. He did nothing to deserve it.
You know who you are listening to this. I'm not going to out you, but
yeah. We should be naming sandwiches after Brett Furman. We shouldn't be slandering his good name on the internet.
What a rib, like, though. Like, just he's obscure enough that you could believe that it is actually him. That's the art of the deal in this situation. But no, not Brett Furman, as it turns out.
Never.
Brett Furman, we salute you. Who's up next?
What a life Brett Furman, what a footballing life Brett Furman lived, man. Do you reckon they named the burger after him?
Hmm.
Like, it has to be post-05, but pre-05.
Yeah.
It has to be in that summer, right?
Yeah, maybe it was around that time.
Maybe it was a deal where that was his custom order there.
Oh, maybe.
And he ordered it so much.
Maybe he went there all the time. Like the Larry David sandwich or the Ted Danson. Yeah, the Brett Furman. Why have we not started a sandwich bar where we name every sandwich after an Earl place?
I don't know. I feel like it's a little bit too adjacent to those burger places that name everything after 90s rappers.
That's true.
Which there was but so my ve- many
my,
of them
there's no NRL player I could use, but my vegan one could be the Adam Zampa. I'm very excited for that. Just get him in there.
Oh, are there any vegan NRL players?
I can't think so.
Aiden Caesar went vegan for a season
once.
Oh, yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
well, the Aiden Caesar with Caesar salad somehow. I'll work it out later.
Get some falafel on there, man. Really, you know, give him a taste.
He's Turkish, so they got that.
Yeah. Mate, give him a taste of Tripoli, baby. Is Tripoli in Turkey? No, it's not. Constantinople, maybe. I don't know, dude.
Constantinople is. No, Tripoli is in Libya. It's the capital.
That's right, yeah.
You're thinking of Gallipoli. And it's kind of bad that
You know what? I'm always thinking of Gallipoli. You know why?
That's true.
Because I respect the troops.
Respect
that
the troops
hard.
At all times. At all times.
At all costs.
Yeah. But all right. Yeah,
Brett Furman, we salute week? You. Our beloved patron, six again.
Oh, and who's he throwing in there? We'll find out.
We will find out. Six How again. Exciting. Get onto us during the week. Your time has come. I'm not sure who he goes for. I have a nasty feeling it might be the Roosters, but. Doesn't matter, man. Like
that would make sense with the name. But
it would, but you know, guys being dudes, that transcends team loyalties, you know. So great choice, Dean Rob. Good stuff.
All right, let's move on to previewing all of the weekend's games starting on Friday afternoon. First home game of the season for the Grand Old Club. How are they $1.40 something favorites? I don't know. But they
There's
are.
There's a couple of games this weekend where
your game as well. We'll get to that later, but that is also quite weird.
Yeah, a couple that are a little bit skewed. How are you feeling, man? Come on, let's talk. Let's bare our souls.
It cannot possibly be worse than last week. That's the first thing I'm telling myself. So they've made one change, Sean Kepi out of the team. He's had a really tough first 3 weeks after being really good in the Charity Shield. I think he's been very poor since in those first three first grade games, and this was a move that makes a lot of sense to me. They're going to start with Tom Burgess and Tevita Totola. Damien Cook's back in the starting lineup as well. We'll see how they handle the middle rotation stuff. Havili not even being in the 17 is interesting. I know he's got a few errors in him, but felt like he was the only one that really created any spark whatsoever against the Broncos a couple of weeks ago. So maybe that's a late change. Shaq Mitchell back in the team does feel a little bit like deck chairs shuffling on the Titanic at this point. But in saying that, you know, if the Roosters are as good as you think they are and as I think they are and as a lot of people think they are, they're one of the best teams. Manly have exceeded expectations massively, and Brisbane were in a grand final. They've played three very good teams to start the season so far. They've been far from good enough in all three of those games, not making a single excuse. But this is by a distance the worst team they will play this year so far, which is the only positive I can think of right now.
Yeah, look, as poor as Souths have been through three rounds, they still have guys who can attack really well. And I actually think this game is going to be won and lost in the first 20 minutes. Say Souths come out and score two quick tries and go up 12-0 in sort of the opening quarter of the match. I don't know if Canterbury are going to have the attacking chops to run them down because as well, like they did quite well last week, but attack is always going to be a problem for them, it seems to me. But say it's 6-0 or nil all even after 20, or maybe Canterbury can grab an early try, sort of boost their own confidence while playing into the sort of funk that Souths are in at the minute, then I could see the Dogs maybe scrapping their way through this and keeping it close all the way and maybe pulling out a win. But if Souths sort of start fast and hard and just play to the strengths that they know they have, if they have the confidence in their systems that Jason Demetriou and Cam Murray say they do, then if they play to that in the opening 20, there's a chance that they're going to be able to sort of kill the Bulldogs off before this really gets started. But the longer it goes when it's close, I think that will actually favour the Bulldogs more, because I think the longer the game goes when it's tight, it will further dent Souths' belief and increase Canterbury's belief, if you know what I'm saying.
Here's Taylor rolling the ball end on him. He's after it. He might have got it down. He thinks he did. Oh!
Cold Train Cup.
Putting it on the line this week, Nick.
You betting the moustache?
I'm cold training them.
Oh, well, that's not as exciting.
Yeah. Yeah, look, if they can't win this, they're going to not win a game this year. But this is a game they put 50 on the Bulldogs last year, and it's a Bulldogs team that's a little bit better, but in my opinion, not particularly much better. And yeah, I think last week was as bad as it gets, and this week, now finally, they've got pretty much everybody writing them off. And a lot of the times when you do get games like this where one team is short price favorites and every single person is going, that's not right, then sometimes you get games where they just end up winning comfortably. Everyone goes, oh, I guess that kind of made sense. Will that be like this? I don't know. I can't win the Coltrane Cup anyway. I was planning on tipping them in this game from the start of the season. And even though the first 3 weeks did as much as humanly possible to dissuade me from doing so, I am still doing that just purely because I looked down the rest of the thing. And the only other team I really love this week is Manly, and I can't tip them because I tipped against the Dragons last week. So this is honestly more out of sort of a lack of other options that look like slam dunks this week, but also a bit of blind faith, because you got to have a bit of blind faith sometimes, don't you?
I'm nothing but blind faith.
Mm.
My faith has not seen the light of day in years. That's how blind it is. It's scrabbling around in the dirt. Are there any matchups that you like for your Rabbitohs?
I think that the only thing I like our matchups across the board. The only thing I'm really scared of is if Dean Hawkins has a similar experience with Viliami Kikau that Tanner Boyd did last week. I mean, Hawkins' main criticism has been his defense from day one. I believe he'll be on the same side of the field too. That's a concern. But also, you know, like, have we seen Kikau chain together two awesome games in a row like this? Not really, not since he left Penrith. So,
well, I'm glad that you highlighted that matchup.
We'll see what happens.
I'm glad you highlighted that matchup because that's one that's really interesting to me as well. We can say that Kikau hasn't been the most consistent since he was at Canterbury, but I think his last two games have been two of his best games since joining the club. So, is that recency bias? Maybe, but put together two good games based on the same principles, which is using his size and his athleticism to impose himself on the match more than his skill or anything like that. You know, and that to me is a replicable action. That's a thing that he controls that he can do every single week. So I'm expecting Canterbury to really, really hunt that match up as much as they can. I think Kikau going off is maybe the key to getting that left side going. And if they can get it going with Burton and Crichton, I feel like there might be some points down there for him. And I actually don't hate for Canterbury the Kiraz Whiten matchup either. Kiraz, fantastic last week. Really physical and rangy and busy in the centers. And while Whiten, it can also be extremely physical. We did see last week some of the struggles that he can have with his positioning at center. It is a difficult place to defend. Hasn't played a lot of club football over the last decade. And Canterbury, I think, seemed to favor running shifts down that side a little bit more than they do their left. So yeah. I think that's another matchup that I think
Stephen Crichton always kills
kind of look
as
well.
At well.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Like, can I bet on there being an intercept try for Crichton?
I might just walk out of the stadium at that point, if and when that happens in the 39th minute or something.
Oh, it's tough, man. It really is. Yeah. Look, I'll go south, but I really did think about tipping Canterbury. I think they're in with a big chance in this one. But yeah, I think Souths will get off to that fast start and Canterbury just won't be able to run them down.
This isn't a very good Friday for Matt Bungard, I'll say, at 5:45 tomorrow.
More like bad Friday.
Exactly. Ho, ho, ho. All right, moving on to the undefeated North Queensland Cowboys coming down to Brisbane. Is the 4X Derby trophy on the line, or is it a lineal title and one of the other two has it right now? I don't actually remember how it works.
I think they call the 4X Derby now is the Cows and the Dolphins.
No, isn't? I thought they have this big ugly trophy that's all four of them, and it stays with whoever wins, and any of the other three can win it off them if they beat them. I thought it was like a title belt.
Dude, I hope that's how it
that's
is.
That's what I thought saw, it was, because I remember them haphazardly putting like a... put 4X's in Google, Matt, not 3.
I saw the Cowboys with the trophy after they beat the Dolphins.
Yeah, same.
But then I assumed that they must have won the trophy off the Dolphins, but then they beat the Dolphins late last year as well. So wouldn't they have already had the trophy?
No, I'm on the 4X website now, and it's got players from all four teams in the little thing at the top. So, yeah.
Oh, okay. That's actually cool. I like that much more than it just being a game between two of the Queensland sides. And then whoever has it at the end of the year should get a summer's worth of 4X for free.
Mm. Oh, actually, hang on a minute. I've scrolled down the page. It's actually a ladder system.
Oh, I hate that.
I don't like that
at all. 4X is not about numbers, man.
No, come on. Someone get on the block. It should be like a championship belt. Yes. A lineal title.
Yes.
What
baby,
are we doing?
Yes. Come
Should
on.
Come to every game between two Queensland teams or whoever's got it at the time. Whenever one of their state rivals comes to town, the trophy's on the line.
Hell yeah, great. Man. I'm so into this. This would be
all right,
so
someone
cool.
Someone who has any influence up there in Queensland, I know we've got a bunch of Queenslanders, there's someone who listens to this, sort it out. Get on the blower, talk to someone, get this sorted.
You know what? You know what I'm thinking? What if we pick at the 4X Brewery?
Could do that.
What if we just do it? What if we chain ourselves to the gates out the front and dare them to do something about it?
Do you remember when I used remember when I had to use the 4X brewery sign, like the Northern Lights, to find my way home on the Sunday of Magic Round 2 years ago because my phone had died and I didn't know. And I didn't have any. Obviously, I only carry a phone, like with my wallet's on my phone, everything's on my phone. So I couldn't go back into the pub or use it to get an Uber or anything, so, or a taxi. So I just looked up in the sky and followed the 4X brewery till I realized where I had to go.
That's a Magic Round fairy tale, man.
Absolutely.
That's the Queensland dream.
Mate, Leeds scored a 90th minute equaliser as I walked through the door and turned the TV on. So it's
fantastic. Oh, magical. Was that the same year that you watched the FA Cup final with Robbie Farrell?
Yes, it was.
There you go.
Might be the most tired I've ever been on that Saturday. The extra time. Jesus. Anyway, this game, Tristan Saylor at fullback, no Reece Walsh, of course. And that has been enough to put the bookies into a position where they want to make the Cowboys favourites. And given that they are 3-0, I think that is, I guess, fair enough, even though it's at Suncorp. What do you think?
I do too. Well, Brisbane are missing their two best players, you know, and Brendan Biakora is out at second row as well. They've got Jaden Hunt coming in. Adam Reynolds returns, which of course is really big for Brisbane, but the Cowboys are pretty close to full strength. This is an interesting one because I feel like the Cowboys are sort of in this stage where they can outgun just about any team in the competition with their point scoring, right?
Hmm.
And because of that, they play a very open brand of football, and the games that they're in are very free-flowing and expansive. You know, you could see that even against the Dragons, who were no point scoring freaks themselves. Hmm. But in the first 20 against the Cows, it was just points everywhere you wanted to get them. So I think the Cowboys are going to do that again. And I actually think playing that way is Brisbane's best path to victory. You know, I don't think they're going to be able to keep things sort of like tight and tense and win this with defense and kicking game and completions. I think their best chance to win is to play expansive, because while they are without Walsh, they've still got Ezra Mann, they've still got Tony Staggs, they've still got Selwyn Cobbo, who I thought was great against Penrith in a badly beaten side. And while Tristan Saylor is not Reece Walsh, he's about as good a backup fullback as you could ask for.
We always come back to it, but he was fantastic in that Warriors game last year during our
Yeah, he was. And he was good whenever he played for them last year. And I think style-wise, obviously only Reece Walsh can be Reece Walsh, but in terms of like a skill set and kind of an athletic makeup, Saylor is pretty similar. So I think this could be a real sort of sideline to sideline shootout, you know, which I'm really looking forward to. Like in a game like that, I'm always going to favor the Cowboys just because that suits who they are so well. But I think Brisbane could give them a real, real good go here. I'm sort of expecting them to kind of dig deep and show a little bit of something this time around, you know, like sort of getting back home, consolidating a little bit, concentrating on the things they'll have to do to weather this storm without Haas and Welsh. They might not win this, but I'm expecting to see some positive signs from them.
Yeah, absolutely agree. And I think you touched on it the other day on the show where you were heartened by what they did after, you know, going down 32-4, whatever it was, in that game against Penrith and then turning around and scoring a couple of tries themselves. They never gave up on that game. They're not going to give up on this one. But I do just feel like with the guys they're missing and with how well the Cowboys forward pack's been playing at the moment, no Payne Haas is pretty massive, and Reece Walsh being out is as big as it gets. As I said, Tristan Saylor, fine backup, as you said, but he is not Reece Walsh. And the Cowboys have just found absolutely no trouble in scoring points in any of their three games so far. And Brisbane, as good as they are, let in a lot of points last week. I feel like the Cowboys could find some joy there on both sides of the ruck, and I'm going to tip them in this one.
I am too. I'm not sure about Jaden Hunt at second row. I will confess that his time in first grade has been pretty limited, and that's mainly where I've seen him. But I sort of know him more as a middle, and I think Brisbane sort of brought him up either this summer or last summer with a view to sort of turning him into a guy who can play both edge and middle. But starting on that edge, I think he'll be on the left side where Piakura usually is. So that means he's taking on the Nanai, Laybutt, the halves kind of swap sides a lot. He's taking on, so it's the Nanai, Laybutt edge. That's the edge that Scott Drinkwater prefers to go down as well. And that's kind of the best attacking weapon the Cowboys have got. So I'm expecting them to really, really go after him, make him make a lot of decisions, make like sort of test his efforts on efforts, that sort of deal. So I think that's a matchup the Cows will look at pretty favorably.
Do you know Tom Chester's name is Thomas, but there's no H?
Oh, Tomas, that's very continental.
Yeah, a bit too continental for North Queensland.
A little bit, but remember we said last week that Tom Chester is like the stereotypical football manager name.
Right for Bournemouth, yeah.
Turns out he's a lot more sophisticated than either of us gave him credit for.
Tomas Chester.
Tomas Hester.
Hester, all right.
Hester, I like it.
No 3 p.m. game on Saturday, which kind of sucks. But so we start with 5:30. Dragons, Sea Eagles, Wollongong's first game of the year. How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm feeling pretty good about the team of the show.
Me too.
For this one. I do think the Dragons are in the pain box a little bit. It sort of came out this afternoon that they're going to hold some crisis talks with Zach Lomax that could potentially lead to an early release. I still think that move to Parramatta is gonna happen sooner rather than later. And while they showed some all right signs in the opening 20 against the Cowboys last week, the way they sort of collapsed over the final part of the game is extremely concerning. And they've made a few changes, but not heaps. Flanagan sort of backing the guys that are already there to dig their way out. And Manly might have lost last week, but scoring points and spreading the ball early and looking dangerous and playing up tempo has become very natural for them. And I just don't think the Dragons are going to have the gears to go with them. I actually could see this playing out quite similar to the Cowboys game last week, where both sides kind of go try for try, maybe for the first 20 or 25, and then Manly just surge ahead
and end up running up a better score. You said on our question time, patreon.com/NRLBoomRookies, this could be the first 50 burger of the season.
I think it could be, which is why...
Here's Taylor rolling the ball end on him. He's after it.
Train Carp.
I'm Cole Training, the team of the show.
Oh, you need a for and against booster after last week.
I 100% do.
Can't all be 3-0. Sorry.
No, it ain't easy, man. This Cole Train life, bro. It's how they get you.
Yeah, I tipped like 3 from 8 last week. It was just miraculous that one of the ones I picked was my Cole Train. So, yeah. Good stuff. Yeah, I'm doing Manly. Comfortable win. Team of the pod, roll on. We've made them fun again.
Good. What about Schuster missing out on the 22 entirely?
Mate, they gave him so much money.
They sure did. Yeah, they sure did.
What a weird career he's had. He's like already on the trajectory that he could be like, what about this bloke in like 5 years' time? It's not great.
Wouldn't that be a power play if someone picks Josh Schuster for what about this bloke next week?
Can we allow that?
That'd be crazy. I don't know. We'd have to send
I don't
it
think
up
we
to
want to
committee.
Encourage shenanigans like that, but it would be very funny.
Do you know much about sumo?
Like the wrestling thing?
Yeah.
No.
So the highest rank in sumo is Yokozuna, right? And
isn't that the guy that was in WWE?
That's where he got his name from.
Ah.
But a Yokozuna is an
Wait, so by that logic, if that was reversed, there would have just been a guy in like Japanese wrestling called super heavyweight.
Pretty much, yeah.
Oh, okay,
well, it's,
cool.
It's not a weight division, though. It's like a...
Oh, like I say, he would have just been called like Platinum
Champion.
Diamond Elite.
Yeah, like calling... So it's like having a boxer whose nickname is Champion.
Okay, okay,
you know?
Okay. All right.
Anyway, so... Yokozuna is incredibly rare. There's only been about 70 of them in the 300-year history of sumo, right? And it's a big, big deal when someone gets elevated to that level. And the people that decide if ever sumo gets elevated to that level are not sumo people. They're like academics and writers and historians because sumo is such a... It's so linked to the culture and the history of Japan. Deciding if someone is a guy or not eligible for what about this guy is decided by a similar panel of chugalugs, boofheads, and absolute gooses. Maybe if Schuster puts his name forward, he can be elevated to that level. But it's a great dishonor to come so close to becoming a guy and not quite reaching it. So the stakes have never been higher for Josh.
I think yes. A lot going on in that that young career at the moment. A lot of stakes.
Is there anything specific that you want to see from Manly here?
Just keep spreading the ball. Keep being fun. Keep being aggressive on both sides of the field. Keep going for those early spreads. Keeping the tempo up as they've done in these first three games. I'm not just saying this because they're the team of the show. I've loved watching them in these first 3 weeks. They've been, to me, probably the most entertaining team to watch so far. All three of their games have been really compelling viewing. And last week's game especially was probably the best game of the season we've had so far up against Parramatta. I know they lost in the end, but you know, Parramatta played pretty well after Junior Bell and Ryan Madison came on. But yeah, just keep being aggressive, keep the foot on the gas. Manly always keep the foot on the gas, though. I mean, they were the Landy Ball kings of fucking running up the score against shit teams. And run up the score, they shall in this, I think.
Yeah, I want to see them try and sustain that tempo through the entire match.
You know, don't go up 20-0 and end up winning like 30-18.
Don't be gassed down the stretch. You know, it's great to always have your foot down, but sometimes the tank gets emptied.
Mm.
You know? So I'd like to see them either pick their spots more or try and find a tempo that's still fast because that clearly suits their style, but try and keep it going for more of the full 80 than for the first 30 like they did
against
Parramatta. And I think for Saints, their best chance is to get this one down in the gutter, make it ugly, make it weird, pray it rains and is windy down in Wollongong on Saturday. I think that's sort of their best hope, is to really muddy the waters as much as possible. But anytime you're talking about a team needing to play that way to be competitive, it's always a pretty tall order.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, they've shocked us once this year. Maybe they'll shock us again. But yeah, it's super weird, the Lomax stuff. I mean, I love him at South, but yeah, it seems Parramatta makes a lot of sense for him, doesn't it? Doesn't it?
Mm. It sure does.
Yeah, okay. The Titans are hosting the Dolphins.
Another 4X derby.
Yeah, they got some points on the line.
Yeah, some treasured 4X points. Ridiculous.
I mean, the Titans will take any points.
What an awful sentence. Well, yes, they really will. I'll tell you,
both scoreboard Annandale points and competition points.
Annandale old boys are fingers crossed that the Finns can hold them to nil here and get Annandale off the bottom.
What were Annandale called?
The Dales.
That's lame.
Well, it was before teams really had mascots.
That's true. I guess Canterbury were the Berries, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm. South were the Ths. Yeah. So.
Yeah. Anyway. So it's crazy when you think about it. Like when you walk around in Annandale now and you're like, this place had a team.
Yeah. It's super weird.
It really reminds you of like the very humble suburban origins of the competition. It does. But still,
pretty cool. Yeah.
Two teams far removed from that origin.
The Tans and the Finns, buttonheads at CBus. Is it CBus Super Stadium still? I don't know. Who cares?
I want to say yes.
Sure. All right. The Dolphins are favourites. The Titans have been as awful as a team could have been through 2 weeks. They have scored a princely 4 points in the first three rounds of the season. I understand that they had a bye, but it doesn't matter. That is as bad as it gets. And they should definitely improve here. This is not a game that I expect them to roll over in, but it is a game that it's still, until they show me something, Nick, I don't think I can kick the Titans to win a game with any sort of confidence.
They have to get better because they can't get worse.
Mm. You would have said that after round one and then they somehow did get worse. So
that's true, I guess. Okay, maybe they can't
score,
get worse.
Actually, they can't score fewer than zero. So they actually can't. That's not possible.
Yeah, so. Look, the Dolphins, I know they held the Dragons scoreless in their last game, but I don't think this is going to be like a quality defensive team or anything like that. So if they can't score a couple of points in this one and at least get a little bit of their attack going, then it is real, real panic stations if it's not already. Hasler, a bit like Flanagan, has backed his guys to dig their way out of the hole. Like even Tana Boyd, who had such a shocker last week, has not been dropped. Jaden Campbell's back at fullback and that'll help matters. And David Fifita's back at second row, and that'll help matters as well. But no Tino Fatsuamalaawi. A lot of the defensive weaknesses that Canterbury exposed, like poor old Bo Fermor, who's having a tough time of it right now, he's still in there. I'll expect the Finns to go after him pretty heavily. If the Finns sort of find that good mix of physicality and expansive play that they found against the Dragons, I'm expecting them to take this one pretty well. I'm sort of looking for a bit of a bust out game from Herbie Farnworth. Like he was very busy against the Dragons, got through a lot of work, but he hasn't quite had one of those real free striding moments that we came to know at the Broncos. So I'm expecting some big stuff from Bert in this one.
Yeah, I'm excited to see what they do. I think that they should win this game. I mean, there's no, I imagine they're probably a popular Coltrane pick with people this week, especially after seeing how bad the Titans were against the Bulldogs. And now that they've also lost their best player, it's so, like, with no Jaden Campbell back is great, but No Tino, no Dave Fifita. Mofo can only do so much. There's very little behind him. Bofa Moore, as you mentioned, one of your favourites, but has not had a good start to the season. And there's just not much to like. Fifita is in the 18, actually, so maybe he comes in as a late sub.
I think
that would be a huge boost for them. I give them no chance without him. I give them a little bit of a chance with him, because despite all their problems, I mean, there were games last year and the year before where they just won by like, or had passes of playing games where you just chuck the ball to Dave Fifita and watch him do something cool.
Well, so, if he can play, I'll dead set just stick him on whatever edge Cody Nikorima is going to defend on and just go after him. That seems to be probably the best use of the big fella in this one.
Fuck, he's good. I love watching him. All right, if he's playing, I'm officially upgrading from apathetic to kind of excited for this.
There you go. What a feather in the cap for your Gold Coast Titans.
I'm tipping the Dolphins.
I am too. I think I'll take that one.
All right. Moving on to Sunday at Go Media Stadium. Roger Tuivasa-Sheck back at fullback. No Taintu Apiki and no Chancel Kukulukstad still. So RTS back in the number one jersey at the Warriors. Bit of nostalgia for everybody involved. And playing a Newcastle Knights team who are coming off a very gutsy win against the Storm. They're sticking with that same spine combination of Gamble, Cogger and Crossland. Or Ponga, obviously. But I've heard some murmurs that Dane Gagai might not be playing. So Will Price could be coming
those,
in.
Those murmurs have turned into full-throated confirmations.
Okay, good. And so who's coming in? Is it Price?
No, Barry Tui is saying that Dylan Lucas will come in the centres.
Okay, sure. Why not?
Mm.
I think this game could be really good. I think that the Warriors got a little bit lucky last week against the Raiders. I think they really got out of jail towards the end of that game. But at the same time, the Knights were pretty close to throwing it away against the Storm too. So I'm just hoping this isn't a repeat of what happened when they met in the second week of the finals last year, because that game was very one-sided. And I don't think it will be, but I think this is going to be a really competitive game.
I kind of think it might play out like that finals game last year.
Ooh.
I do. I think just because the Warriors, I know I talk about it a lot, but their attack is so settled and they know exactly how they want to do it, and they know how they want to set the platform. I think they're just going to be able to attack in a far more confident way than the Knights can. You know, the Knights are still figuring a lot of stuff out. You know, they're still without Greg Marju, so exit sets are going to be a problem for them. I think if the Warriors start well and set a platform and Sean Johnson kicks well and pins the Knights down their end and they turn them over a few times, really, really sort of turn the screws, I think they'll be able to sort of play with a sustained pace and intensity that the Knights aren't quite going to be able to match.
Yeah.
And I'm expecting them to do a similar thing to what they did last year, where they really, really target the Knights down the edge of the field. I think they'll really, really go after Dylan Lucas out in the centers. I quite like him as a footballer, but I think he's an out-and-out second rower. And I think Luke Metcalf is playing a more confident role in this Warriors attack by the day. That left edge, so the Knights' right edge, that's Luke Metcalf's side. And even though Adam Pompey is no Roger Tuivasa-Sheck, he's capable enough to sort of play his part in that attack. So I'm expecting Metcalf and Ford to have really big games targeting that channel, and I'm expecting the Warriors to win this pretty well.
Yeah, I'm actually tipping the Knights, because I think that the start of this game is going to be so important. We've seen now in consecutive weeks, the Warriors basically, in weeks one and three, get off to really hot starts. And then when the bench forwards have to come on, the drop-off is so stark that they let the other team back into the game. And I look at the Knights bench. I've always been a big Matt Croker guy, and I think Jack Hetherington's had a pretty solid start to the season. I think that once Adam Fanua-Blake goes off the field and they get at those backup middles for the Warriors, that could be a time in the game where the Knights gain some ascendancy. So if the Warriors aren't up by probably like 10 points when those guys go off the field, I think the Knights could really use that middle period of the game to strike and find a way to get in front and then to see things out. That's one way of winning it. I don't know if it'll happen. I think it'll be close, but I'm tipping the Knights.
Yeah, I would have agreed with you last week about getting at the Warriors bench, but Muratani Okorie is back now, and they're sort of transitioning him into being a middle forward full-time with a view to him taking over as the starter once Fanua-Blake leaves. So I think he's really, really going to stiffen them up. He's going to give them a lot more athleticism in the middle of the field and a lot more power in the middle of the field than they would have if they were still playing Tom Arley or Jazz Tavanga or someone like that. Dylan Walker's back for them as well after missing the game against the Raiders. So I'm expecting the Warriors to have a more sustained, not dominance, but just to be better for longer in the middle of the field. If I was the Knights, I feel like I just say it all the time. I swear to God, I'm not being lazy, but it's always going to be that left side for them. You know, with Ponga and Best and getting them together, it still hasn't really happened this year. I would like to see them really target Kurt Capewell, who will be defending on that right edge for the Warriors. Same deal, make him make decisions, make him do effort on efforts, try and get Kai Pierce-Paul at him a little bit, you know, like really, like get the big mobile young fella taking on the older guy, you know, try and get as much clean ball to Best as possible. It's always a good move for them. There's a big Kalyn Ponga, Bradman Best bust out game. There's going to be one coming soon, right? They're both too good for it to not happen soon. And maybe this is the week it can happen, but I'm still favoring the Warriors. If Wade Egan back, if he plays, he's been named the last 2 weeks, but hasn't played. If he plays this time around, he'll be a big inclusion. So there's just more things drawing me towards the Warriors of Auckland in this one.
Yep, fair enough. It'd be boring if we tipped all the same teams, wouldn't it? So go the Knights. Shout out Harry Ramage, my boy. All right, Sunday night. I'm still undecided whether I'm going to go to this, but 6:15 p.m., the Sharks, the Raiders, Shark Park, and this was the other wonk betting line we were talking about at the start of the previews. Sharks at $1.50 after getting absolutely pantsed by the Wooden Spooners last week.
Yeah, I can't really work that one out, because even if the Sharks were closer to full fitness, I would think the Raiders are just a tough stylistic matchup for them. I said last week that I think the Sharks, the Raiders, and the Warriors are all at a very similar level, and it comes down to matchups. And of those two, I think the Sharks are the best matchup for the Raiders, just because, like we've said so many times, there is still that question mark over the Sharks' middles. And if the Raiders have anything, it's big, mean forwards who are going to do a lot of big, mean shit, you know? So with Rudolph out and Finucane out and Royce Hunt out as well, the Sharks are really, really digging deep. For a second there, I thought our guy Max Bradbury was going to get a run off the bench for him, but that hasn't ended up happening. But I'm expecting if Canberra can sort of play to their own strengths in this one, if they can really hit the Sharks hard early in the game and really set the tone for this match as being a physical scrapping encounter, which Canberra's pretty good at doing. They're pretty good at getting teams to play their game rather than allowing the other team to play their way. If they do that, I don't think the Sharks are going to be able to sort of slice and dice their way out of this. If they were to do that, they'll have to rely really heavily on their back five, which is one of the best back fives in the competition. So why wouldn't you do that? But they'd be relying on them not only to score all their points, but do the majority of their yardage as well. And I just think it's too big an ask. I think that back five is already carrying a lot of weight for this team, and you're asking them to carry more again. So I do like this one for Canberra.
Yeah, it's funny, mate, because, you know, we've talked repeatedly about the Raiders' forward depth. They have so much. Just look at the guys that don't get a game for them every week. And the Sharks are at a point where now Sifo Talakai is back in the forward pack because they simply do not have enough guys to be carrying the load there. Whilst I don't really think that Royce Hunt or Dale Finucane at this point are particularly big losses, Toby Rudolph is. And their forward pack is just so thin at the moment. I love Tom Hazelton, but I think he's much better coming off the bench than being a starter. Oaken Kafusi has never really stepped up his game and become the guy that they need him to be. And there's not a lot to love on the bench, is there? I mean, maybe Tuku Hautapua could come on. He's so big, cause of madness. But yeah, Jack Williams, Billy Burns, I'm not enamored with it. But I just think that the Sharks back seven is so solid and so dynamic that this is going to be a game where they can find some joy with ball in hand, as long as they can keep the field position kind of relatively in their favor. I don't expect them to win the forward battle, because as long as they don't get completely trounced, I think they can win this game. But, you know, they could get completely trounced because it's a red hot Raiders forward pack, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And they've made a couple of moves this week that I really like. I like that they've dropped Emre Guler. I like that they've dropped Nick Kotrick as well. I really, really, really wanted them to bring Corey Horsburgh back into the team on the bench. I like Pasami Solo, but Horsburgh like very clearly offers so much more. He got through 65 minutes in New South Wales Cup this weekend. I want cousin Corey back in the side. What are you thinking of Talakai at second row? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Is it more out of necessity than anything else?
I think so, but they don't have anybody else. Yeah,
like,
I know. Well, they could have put the Park Spaceman Billy Burns out there. They could have gone Jack Williams there again, but Do you think it could be?
Well,
could it be a semi-permanent move?
He did start as a back row.
Yeah, he did.
So I mean, played played a bit of back row off the bench at South in his first couple of games before then playing in the centres for a few games in 2017 before. And then I think the start of his Sharks career was also in the back row, right? If I'm remembering correctly, in the COVID year.
Yeah, well, he started off as a bench forward and then
became a centre.
He became a centre in 2022 just as a filling. Before that, he was a bench forward.
Yeah, so we know he can do the job. And I think that in a game like this where they're just so light in terms of physicality and in terms of guys that can break a tackle or put a hit on or do something, I think they have to do this. I think it's an absolute no-brainer for them. And I know that there's guys down there that have big raps on Kyle Arrow. So if he's a guy that long-term fits into this team, then maybe this is a move that makes sense. Maybe this is a move that makes sense down the line because... Well,
we've talked about in the past about him maybe moving to lock.
Yeah.
To give that middle third...
Because they need, I think their forward pack needs a bit more punch.
Yeah, so maybe this can be the start this transition, but it's hard to say. This is the sort of game that has always sort of scared me with Canberra because it's a game I think they should win, and I think it's a game that matches up stylistically well for them. So to that end, I'm terrified that they're going to totally drop the ball and kind of be insane about it all. That's a habit that's really, really hard to break. But if this team does want to break that habit, these are the sorts of games that they have to win. Games that aren't going to be walkovers that they're going to have to work hard to win. But if they do work hard, they should be able to take it. You know, I think Raiders teams in the past have been a bit guilty of taking what the other team gives them. This time I would really like to see them take what they want, you know, like go out there and dictate terms, decide what sort of game this is going to be from the jump. Because they've got the team to do that. So, fingers crossed. Could be a lean Easter Sunday if it goes the other way for your boy.
You going down?
No, I can't. I can't, I'm afraid.
Fair enough. Afraid of losing. Understand. All right.
If I was afraid of losing, I'd never go to Raiders games.
You could have just let that one go.
Why? Why should I let it go? You never let it go.
Famously. Monday. Easter Monday, some are saying. Parramatta. Tigers. Bay Stadium. 4 o'clock, a resurgent Tigers team coming off, playing a Parramatta team coming off a very impressive win over the previously undefeated Manly Warringah Seagulls. But the big news, of course, no Mitchell Moses. Same place to Lungi, moves into 5'8" from the centres. And Micah Sivo comes back for Parramatta.
Yes, big inclusion for Parramatta. But I actually quite like the Tigers for this one.
It only ever takes one Tigers win for you to be all in.
No. Okay. That's true. But also, hear me out. Okay. So Parramatta have been strong in the middle of the field through most of this season. And their forward rotation is what got them back into the game against Manly. They were able to get pieced up by Manly on the edges of the field, particularly on that Talungi Harper edge. Okay. So that avenue will not be as available to the Tigers because it's not there anymore. Harper's into the centers. But they're still going to be able to go after Talungi, go after Harper, exploit that combination, as exploit the lack of experience that they have together. And I don't think Parra's going to be able to go through West the way they were able to go through Manly once the benches came on. I think the Tigers are too resilient in the middle of the field with Steph playing big minutes, with Pole playing big minutes. I don't think Parra's going to be able to overrun them in that way. And I think there's a chance that, say, Cartwright gets ruled out with that rib injury, which everyone is, I think Michael Chambers is reporting that's probably going to happen. So then you've got Madison out there. He hasn't played a lot of edge in recent years. I know he's done it a lot in the past, but it's still going to be new combinations around him. I don't know if Parramatta are going to be able to target the Tigers the same way they're able to target the weaknesses of that Seagulls team. You know,
no.
So I know it'd be a big jump for West to do this 2 weeks in a row. But if they play with the same intensity, if they play with the same spirit, if they put in the same effort for one another, and Galvin and Buller are able to keep combining, and Appy's able to put a couple of blokes in holes, and John Bateman's able to rip someone's face off, like, I don't know. I think it's not the worst matchup for them. I think it's all right for them.
No, I agree, but also, there is every chance that last week was an oasis in the desert for the West Tigers. Like, they were feeding off the emotions of Leichhardt, had a great game. Everything went perfectly. Appy Coruscant had an absolute stormer. Everyone behind him played great. That also happened last year in that game we went to against the Cowboys, and they didn't win a game for the rest of the season. So whilst I did like what I saw from the Tigers last week, I'm not going to fall into the trap of just believing that that's going to be the norm with them from now on. So if they can show me something in this game, then I'll start to believe a little bit more. But until a time comes where I can see the West Tigers string together three or four solid weeks of football in a row, rather than just these one-off, very entertaining wins that they've pulled out now this year and last, I don't think that's a team I can commit to long-term in regards to like tipping them with confidence in games like this against the Parramatta team, who, again, looked really good and really well-drilled last week. So I will be tipping the Eels in this one. But again, Tigers, show me something. Just make it entertaining. Because, I mean, these games, it was a couple of years ago, the Jackson-Hastings Easter Monday game, right? That was the, yeah. And then that's the only one they've won, I believe, in recent years.
Yeah, and like the way that you're looking at it is totally fair. Because there also is every chance that the Tigers can't replicate that same effort and they get blown off the park a little bit by Parramatta. But I do think they can do it. I do. Yeah. I know I've been guilty of believing in them too early in the past because, like, you know, I kind of want to see it happen a little bit. I want to see the Tigers come out of this misery and start building something else. But, you know, maybe this is the time. I've only got to be right about it once. I can be wrong about it 1,000 times.
Parra have won 9 of the last 10 against the Tigers. The one exception being that Jackson Hastings field goal game on Easter Monday 2 years ago. But I'll tip Parra in this one. Are you tipping Tigers?
Yeah, I'll go West. Why not? Let's mix it up.
Did we lock it? I'm tipping Sharks and you're tipping Raiders, I assume, but I don't think we said it.
Oh, yeah, of course. Okay,
sorry. Well, get out there.
Goes without saying.
Simi Renrandra trying the chip and chase. Oh, no, it's Simi.
Oh, this will be interesting.
Oh, yes, it will, yes.
Semi Rundrundra.
Oh, he's absolutely buried it. Rundrundra.
Okay, some news before we get out of here. The NRLW has become a 12-team competition, Nicholas.
It has, yes. The Warriors will be rejoining the comp and the Bulldogs will be joining it for the first time. So we're going to have 12 teams, which is a lot. It's a lot of teams.
Still not enough for my team to have one.
Well, it sounds like a skill issue.
Sure. You just use an internet word. Are you proud of yourself?
I don't go on the internet. You know that.
No, that's bullshit. Great news. I think it's weird because, you know, there's some corners that have been rallying against expansion. We ourselves have talked about this last year when the announcement was that it was going to go from 6 to 10. I think it was... I mean, there were some blowouts last year, but I think overall the quality was okay. But I, again, questioning whether we need to be rushing to add more teams again. The Warriors did need to come back in. Absolutely agree. And you can't really kick someone out. So that's, and then you don't really want buyers because buyers are lame. So you got to have a 12th team. I get it. But also 12, I mean, are we starting to stretch the resources a little bit thin?
I thought in 2023 the resources were already stretched pretty thin, and I would have preferred to see them wait another season before they introduced new sites, just because you have to give the talent pool time to sort of regenerate and have enough spots to fill all these teams. That might be able to be you might be able to mitigate that because you're bringing in Canterbury, so it's another Western Sydney team, and that's where a good deal of the players are coming from. And you're bringing in the Warriors, where, again, there's a big talent pool across the Tasman. I assume there's a lot of players over there who, for real life reasons, weren't able to commit to coming over to Australia for 3 months to play in a semi-professional competition. You know, there's probably a couple more Malay Hofungas in New Zealand that they'll be able to sign up for that Warriors side. So At least they've put two teams in real areas of in real strong areas for the sport. But yeah, it does seem like a jump. It wasn't that. It was 2 years ago we had six teams in the comp, and now it'll have doubled in size within a very, very short period of time. And the competition has improved very, very rapidly, but we're really testing that to its limits right now.
Yeah, I think so. But, you know, the Bulldogs have been carving up in the younger grade competitions, as Phil Gould has been quick to remind us. So
yeah, you know, well, there's a lot of real grassroots growth out of Canterbury.
I realize that sounded extremely sarcastic, but it wasn't actually meant to be. Like, there's so many people out there that want to play rugby league, boys and girls, and yeah, you got to fish where the fish are, I guess. So.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I think Canterbury's been putting in a lot of hard yards with their junior women's teams for the last, probably since the end of COVID, so the last 3 or 4 years now. And I think them getting admitted ahead of some other teams is a real reward for that. It's a reward for years of grassroots efforts.
Yeah. Well, wish we could have been rewarded for our previous grassroots efforts.
Why do South State women?
Not a meritocracy a lot of the time, is it? It's just everyone against the grand old club once again.
Yep, 100%. Yeah, that's it for sure, man.
Yep. Cam Munster could be back next week. It's exciting.
I'll believe it when he's out there, man.
Okay, and that's what the club's actually saying it though. So that's good news.
Yes, but this is the same club who, as recently as last week, said they weren't sure what was wrong with him.
Well, hang on. Cameron Smith said that.
That's like the Storm saying it.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, he is the Storm.
That's like
Storm Man, their creepy mascot himself, has gone up there and spilled that truth.
Fantastic. You got any other news?
Isaiah Katoa has officially re-signed with the Dolphins.
Oh, I thought he was already on like one of those ridiculously long deals.
No, that I think it had been reported, but it just got confirmed today.
Oh, well, good for you, Isaiah. Yep. You've been great so far.
Why didn't he play round one? We may never know.
Oh, there's one story we've got to talk about. Your man, Albert Hopewadi.
Yes. It's an interesting one, man. So he got ruled out of Canberra's game this weekend due to a cooking incident where a bottle of spray oil exploded at a barbecue.
I mean, it's actually quite serious. I shouldn't lie.
Well, it sounds like he dodged something rather serious. Much worse. You know?
Yeah. But, yeah, add it to the list of funny things. Because he is fine, relatively. Add it to the list of funny things that have happened to NRL players.
Apparently, he tried to train the next day.
I love that.
Very tough. Tough man, Bert Hopps.
Bertie Hopps. But, yeah, funny stuff.
Then this news has only just dropped in the last 5 minutes. Jai Arrow is unlikely to play again this season.
Fuck.
Yeah, that shoulder injury is looking...
Oh, I thought we were getting him back in like round 8, they said the other day.
Yeah, it says next to no chance of playing again in 2024.
Fantastic. What a club.
He's attempting to rehabilitate the shoulder over 8 weeks in the hopes of contributing this season. That's a long shot, though, given the injury is quite problematic.
God damn it. Yeah, well, that sucks.
I can't believe the Fat Cats down at Big Shoulder are out to get the grand old club.
Yeah, world's against us. Oh, well, doesn't matter. We're not going anywhere this year anyway. What a waste of time. It's a stupid sport. All right, before we get out of here, quick thank you to the people in the top 2 tiers on our Patreon system service. If you'd like to support us, go to patreon.com/NRLBoomRookies. You get access to our Discord server, third show every week, merchandise discounts, and plenty more. So thank you to a perverted female listener. Up, Chris Abnell. Dave. Hello. Frank Walker from National Tiles. Stu. Wano worships Wilton when he whacks weak woeful wingers. Adam Small. Broncos legend. Adam Reynolds. Bruce the Pied in Pom Butsy. Chivakas Novalagas. Dan Cullinane. David. Digging Coal with Danny Levi. An anonymous backer. Ed Burton. Fuck Reggie Ledoux. Good to see you commit to something, Marty. Gordon Tallis versus Ben Ross. He and Mum's going out with Squeak. Jason Joe. Joel Wrigley. John. Josh Brandon. Kicks out some. Critch and Terry R. The Meriglim. Lachlan Hancock. Luke Charles Smidmore. Mads Taylor's version. Matthew Duggan. Morgan Watkins. My name is Matt Bungard. And I love the great outdoors. My name is Nick Canton. Rugby union is my favorite type of rugby. My ding ding dong is hard and I'm sad. Never trendy. Nick Kotrick lives on my street. Subliminally coaching him to run it straight. Zami Army. Paul Mack 78. All axed in a 2-man tackle. Push it up. Manly. Reese Brown. Rested by Demetrio. Rodrigo Eduardo and the curse of the accidental head glass. Roxanne Clark. Rugby league is now a shit game. See you in Vegas. Shunter. South now sponsored by Biltmore Container Shipping and Transport. The Black Vegetable. The most bung of bungards. Thor, Tom Hardy, Was, and Westlife Podcast. West Tigers are back, baby. Thank you so much for your support. To everyone in the lower tiers and to everyone who just listens, thank you as well.
Reggie Ledoux was a piece of shit. He deserved what he got.
Absolutely. Yeah. Gosh, we're going to lose tomorrow, aren't we? But today we'll get to do this. Oh, good.
Okay, like let's get right down to it, man. Will the stash go if they lose to Canterbury?
You're obsessed with my body.
Well, dude, I think it's the only thing it's the only play you've got left.
Yeah. I mean, Simon of all people made the great point that if I acquiesce to this nonsense, it means that I'm acknowledging that jinxes and curses and stuff are real, and I am the preeminent jinxes and curses are not real guy of our time. So
when you grew the when you started the Stash, they were top of the ladder.
I am fully aware.
And they're what? They're 4 wins and 15 losses since.
The Stash has never seen them win a game.
Yeah, man. Like, I know you're not Jinx guy, but
I'm not Jinx guy.
There are powerful forces at play here.
I guess. All right, maybe. I don't know. Probably not. So, well, are you gonna shave your beard if the Raiders don't win the comp? The whole time you had the beard, the Raiders never won the premiership. Shave your beard.
They didn't win one when I was clean shaven either.
Yes, they did. 1994, 95, whatever it was.
No, I was actually born with quite a thick beard.
I don't think you were. I think you've realized that you've painted yourself into a corner. Nick, you were clean shaven the last time the Raiders won the premiership. Maybe if you believe that facial hair is directly linked to your team's competitiveness levels, then maybe you should revert back to your clean shaven roots that you had when the Canberra Raiders last won a grand final. Why don't you shave your beard? Why don't you shave? Go have a big shave. Go on.
Do you want to let me answer?
Because you're going to lie and say you had a beard when you were 3 years old. Which
Can you
is bullshit.
Prove me wrong?
Yes. Because children don't have beards.
I was
beards.
One of those bearded children that you read about in magazines.
You would have been caravanned around from town to town for people to gawk at you for a hay penny.
They put me in a caravan. They took me around the West.
Two bits of gander. Yeah, exactly. That didn't happen, did it? I'm calling the show The Bearded Child. No one's going to listen. This is after people stop listening when I get to the shout outs. No one's going to hear this.
Did they really?
I don't know.
We can say whatever we want then. We're protected. Yeah.
By the way, during the show, Sarah messaged me and said she saw a guy walking around Redfern in full Sydney Roosters kit, walking his dog.
Wow, what a power play.
This is where we're at. The disrespect to come through Redfern in full kit and not expect to get bashed. Fuck. What happened?
You've got to shave that, Mo. It's the only way.
I like that you ignored my very accurate and fair riposte to you and your beard.
But see, I don't think it's a... Well, that's different because it's me. No, I don't think it's a one-size-fits-all thing. It's not like everyone's facial
hair.
This
is like every other time I play the Unireverse on you where you go, but that's different because it's you and not me.
It's crazy how things are different when they're different.
They're not different, Nick.
But the correlation is impossible to ignore. Souths were a perennial preliminary final team, and then you grew the Stash, and then they weren't anymore. Like, there's a clear demarcation point. Like, Canberra was shit for 20 years when I started growing the beard already. You know? And since I've grown the beard, they've been much better than they were in the preceding 20.
Have you ever gone on like that page that talks about how correlation does not imply causation and it shows two things that correlate that have nothing to do with each other?
No, I shouldn't be allowed on that page.
It's like there's two graphs that correlate like uniformly for like 15 years. And I'm reading it. It's people who drowned after falling out of a fishing boat and the marriage rate in Kentucky.
Man.
And they correlate. So I guess...
Bunch of real fun-loving nerds on that page.
Oh, yeah, the per capita consumption of chicken and the correlation with the total U.S. crude oil imports.
Okay, I think there's something to that.
The per capita consumption of mozzarella cheese and the number of civil engineering doctorates awarded.
Okay, well, if you need a snack when you're studying for your doctorate...
you're eating a big ball of mozzarella. Like a little rat boy Campton just gnawing away. Nom, 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 nom.
Just biting into it like an apple, letting the cheese drip down your chin like Costanza did, bro.
Can your nickname be the bearded boy from now on?
Drenched in velvet, like smashing cheese, bro, Costanza style.
Is that what they threw into the caravan when they wheeled you around town to town? They just threw balls of mozzarella. Here, feast on this bearded boy.
If you'd ponied up two bids for a gander, you would know the answer to that, bro. You could have thrown mozzarella at me yourself, but you chose not to. Probably because there was some sort of correlation or causation on the line that you would not acquiesce to.
No, I will never acquiesce. Anyway, all right, let's get the hell out of here. Say goodbye, Nick.
Goodbye, Bertrand.
That's goodbye from me.